What I was going to do for this episode, and I forgot, I was going to try and get some tinsel and just put it along the front because it's our two Christmas episodes. Yeah.
Maybe we can do that for my one.
Yeah, we'll do it for your one. Very much in the theme of like an office Christmas, a very sad bit of tinsel.
A sad.
Way too late.
Pathetic piece of tinsel.
But not long enough.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for the listeners listening, we have a very special treat for you on today's podcast. Woo! We've been listening to all the feedback we've been getting where people have said, hey, we love the podcast. We love hearing about all the jobs, odds and sods. But what about you guys?
Yeah.
So we thought before the end of the year, when we take a little hiatus over the Christmas break, we would give you a Ruby and Kat episode each.
Yeah.
So today's guest on the podcast is Ruby Kat. But we're going to do an introduction. We're going to give credit where credit is due. So, Ruby Kat, let me list your credits of all your amazing achievements.
Well, disgusting.
You are the nominated for Neurodiverse Review ADHD Comedy Award.
Thank you.
And there's a lot. You might be like, oh, wow, niche. No, all of comedians are ADHD. Oh, so, that's actually a real credit. Winner of the Funny Women Comedy Writing Award.
Thank you.
Funny Women Stage Award, One to Watch.
Yes, thank you.
Amuse Moosh, New Act of the Year finalist.
Yes.
Listed in the top 10 for Voices of the Future scheme.
Yes.
And writer and director of eBay and Car Crash.
Yeah.
And co-host of the brilliant Odd Jobs podcast. Welcome, Ruby
Kat. Yeah, there we go.
Welcome.
Thank you. Oh my God, what a lovely space you have here.
Well, it's not really our space, but yeah.
You've done incredible.
Thanks for coming. It was really hard to sort out our schedules. Get this in the diary.
Yes, it was.
It actually really was. It was tough, actually. Thank you very much.
We've done very well.
We've really tried really hard. So, Ruby, very much a pleasure to have you here on the pod.
So stupid.
It's so lovely to have you.
So lovely to be here. Yeah, Thank you so much.
I realised I didn't send you a briefing document beforehand, which I send to normally all of our guests, but I figured you'd know what the score.
Funny enough, I was co-writing it with you.
Yeah, the spelling mistake's yours. Yeah.
100%.
No, but yeah, as it sounds out, you are a very, very, very successful comedian and writer.
I try to be.
Podcaster. But also, I feel like one of the things that maybe the audience aren't aware of is also workshop coordinator, host.
Yeah, we've.
What do we call it? Teacher?
Facilitator.
That's what we've been referring to as facilitator. Workshop facilitator.
Yeah.
So tell the people at home.
That
was like a real TV show moment. Yeah. Tell the people watching at home. Shout out to everyone on YouTube and Patreon watching it live. Go subscribe.
Thank you.
But yeah, tell everyone as well a bit, because I feel like this is also a very cool thing that you do.
Yeah, I it's so weird because this has sort of happened in the last year, and definitely while we've been recording these podcasts, it's sort of like really like ramped up.
Revved up.
But I teach scientists and academics how to do stand-up comedy to improve their public engagement and science communication skills.
Look at how good she did. Just all in one sentence, wrapping that up like that.
Have I had to say that a lot recently?
Yeah. Yes. She's been having some business meetings.
I made business cards.
Yeah.
I made 250 business cards. Gave out one. But that one went to a very good person.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that worked.
Listen, it's not about quality or quantity. It's about quality.
Other than when you're buying business cards because it's cheaper to buy more.
Yeah, you may as well. May as well do the quantity. But yeah, it's really cool. You facilitate, you teach stand-up comedy as well. So you are, you know, a performer, a teacher, an all-round, you're in all facets of it.
It's because also like, I mean, I've always loved science. I've just not been clever enough to do it.
That's firstly bullshit. Let's just get out the absolute gate now. That is bullshit. Because you 110% could do anything you set your mind to, but absolutely anything to do with science or maths.
Well, okay. Maybe to do with like engineering or physics or maybe biology. Chemistry, no. I've recently worked with a chemistry cohort and they are, I was like, one of the first things we do in the first session is like get everyone, they have it, basically it's called having a go, the microphone. And so they all get up and have a go at walking up to the microphone, taking the mic out the mic.
You'll be charging a lot of money for this.
I really am. And saying like hello into the microphone and then we like discuss afterwards.
Yeah.
But they all say what they they do. Usually the groups, they say stuff and I'm like, I've got a vague understanding of what that is. I could talk
about
that.
Computer scientists.
They can explain it to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, psychology.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all that sort of thing. The chemists, they went up and I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, shit.
That English.
How am I going to help when every other word is something I don't know?
No, yeah.
No.
Ruby came to me afterwards and was like, yeah, I really don't know. And I weirdly and should not have. And this is why I'm like, you could have done it. I did chemistry for Leaving Cert, which is A level. And I shouldn't have done it. I did one of those fucking dumb aptitude tests. And they were like, you've got good abstract reasoning. That's chemistry. I was like, is it? You know, you're like, I've never shown any inclination towards doing that. But at the time, I was still like debating with possibly being like doctor's a stretch, but like something in the medical field or something like that. And so for a lot of those, you have to have a science. And the problem was I had huge beef. There was two biology teachers in our school and you did not get to pick which one you ended up with. And one of them, like I had not been able to finish my junior cert science classes with her. Yeah, yeah. This is the woman that I called Miss Crummy.
Yeah.
Or no, sorry. Her name was Miss Crummy. I called her Miss Scummy. But that was to her face.
That's just to her face. But that's just right face. There in front of you.
She kept calling me. Fuck, what did she call me? Oh, Catherine Murphy. That was it. She kept calling me Catherine Murphy. And everyone was like, that is not her name. Like, where are you getting Murphy? There is no Catherine Murphy in the school. Like, where are you getting that name from? And she basically, one day when I was out, she was like, where's Catherine Murphy? They were like, Miss, like, why do you call her Catherine Murphy? She turned around and told the entire class it was because she had a friend growing up whose name was Higgins, Cat Higgins, Catherine Higgins, full name. And it was a good friend of hers and she really liked her. So she didn't want to associate me with that name because she didn't like me and she didn't want me associated with it. So she just called me Murphy because she knew someone called Catherine Murphy and she didn't like them. So she actively chose to call me the wrong name and told the rest of the class when I wasn't there. And when I came in, people said they're like, oh, Miss Scummy. And like people used to call her Scummy behind her back, obviously, because it's teenagers. But they were like, oh, she doesn't like you. And I was like, what? And then like our school captain, like the head girl, the girl who was like the loveliest, like is a doctor, you know? Now she was like, yeah, no, she said that. And I was like, the fuck? And so then I called her Scummy to her face. And then we got brought, but I had read the school's code of conduct where it said that in terms of respect to teachers, I've told you this story.
Yeah,
it said like, you will show teachers the respect they show you. And I was like, absolutely fucking stunning. So then we got dragged to the year head's office and she was like, she called me Scummy. And he was like, whoa, what's going on? And then I was like, yeah, I did. And he was like, looking at me like, what? Because I was not that bold of a kid. Talked too much, but wasn't like, you know, fucking calling teachers scum to their face. And I was like, yeah, I did. And I was like, ask her what she calls me. And she was like, I just mix up the name. I was like, go ask the class. I was like, go ask. Shout out Sarah Coyne, the goodest, like the head girl, the really good one. I was like, she told the entire class she chooses to not call me by my name because she doesn't like me. That's a huge level of disrespect. So why? I was like, as per the code of conduct, it's number nine in the code of conduct. And then they were just like, what the fuck do we do? And he was like, he like was looking at the teacher being like, are you insane? You like told a whole classroom full of kids you hate this kid and that's why you don't call her by her name. He was like, we can't drag her parents in here because then they'll fucking sue you. And so he was like, she was like, she's not coming back into my classroom. And I was like, I don't want to go back to our classroom. So then for the rest of the term, for the, like 6 weeks, I never went back to science. So anyways, when it came to picking subjects, I was like, I can't get biology.
No.
I can't do it with Scummy. So I was like stuck and I really wasn't good at physics. So then when they said this aptitude test meant I was good at chemistry, I did chemistry. Shouldn't have done it. It's really difficult. I understand that you didn't understand any of the cohort.
Yeah. Well, I do now. I added in an exercise in the second session, which was really fun, which helps them, which was basically they had to explain what their job again, what they do. But the first time they just explain it and they highlight the words that maybe might be things that they have to explain to someone else. Like just so that they know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second level was then they had to explain it like as if they were telling over their a child, their grandma, an alien, and there's a series of people that they can pick from who they now have to explain it to. Then they have to explain it, but using either a cooking metaphor or a travel or transport metaphor. And then they have to explain it again, but this time I only using one or two syllable words or without using the letter E.
Oh, wow.
And so, but it's just getting them to think about explaining it using
really
different
break
words.
It down.
And then, but also like, some then like that last one, it was bringing up words and phrases that were quite fun and were useful for then them thinking about comedy.
See how
much
she loves it.
I love it, and I also like getting to talk to all these people and the fun things that they do and their research. And
but also you get to really share comedy, which is your love and passion, with them.
And I get to share comedy back with them. Like, we watch, I always tell, so we watch a Janine Haruni clip as a whole group. I make them all watch it. I'm like, we're watching the whole 5 minutes. Because there's an excellent callback.
Janine, friend of the pod, future soon-to-be guest.
Yeah, because there's a really good callback in it. And so I'm like, well, for the callback, you have to watch the whole thing. So I do feel like a teacher who's wheeled out the TV and gone, ha-ha, 5 minutes.
Amazing. Anyways, but Ruby, you're not on this podcast to talk about the cool job you currently do.
Oh, yeah.
We're here to talk about all the odd jobs you've done in your life that got you to where you are now. Yeah. Okay, so let's start where we always start. First question of the pod, you know it well.
Yeah.
What was the first way you ever made money?
Okay, so I think the first way I ever made money, if I really think about it, like the first time when I was like, action results in money.
Yeah.
Was that when we used to go doing camping holidays as a child. When it got to summer holidays and we went to Swanage and we'd go camping.
Where's Swanage?
It's Dorset.
Oh, okay. So I thought you went to France on your camping holidays, no?
No.
Did you not get a ferry over to France or something?
No. My family went camping to France before I was born.
Oh, and then once you came along, they were like, well, let's cut that out.
Yeah, cut that out. but we go to Swanage.
Okay, that was like sorry.
So we always used to go to. My mum basically said that we weren't allowed our pocket money until we had made a friend, because it was the idea of getting us out of the tent and getting our other siblings gone. The thing is, I love that. As the car would be pulling into the campsite, I'll
be opening the door,
scouting out the other children. As soon as the car had reached enough of a stop, leap out, run at some children across the campsite.
As if you weren't social enough.
And go, hello, I'm Ruby, what's your name? Grab their names, be like, excellent, come with me. And then I walk them back to the tent and I'll be like, mother, here is my friend. Money, please.
Play me. Those kids are there being like, are we being sold? You were kind of doing a version of child trafficking then. You were like, yeah. I was going into summer camps, finding children who were unattended, grabbing them, getting a bit of money for it.
Yeah.
Right. So child trafficking, interesting way to start your commerce career.
I tell my mum, I'd be like, look, mum, I made friends with every child in this campsite. Can I get a bonus?
I was going to say, were you on commission?
I think it got me out of the tent. And then the
Epstein files, more like car files. How many children were on that campsite?
No, but it was great. But like, my siblings wouldn't want to do it. They would be hiding
in the
tent. Yeah,
I do. I love the idea that that your mother had to gamify socializing, because I was like, in what world? And then I was like, the brothers. Yeah. I feel like Daisy's social, no?
Yeah, but they were, so where I would
They were
been,
too old to want to make friends.
Yeah, they were older.
Yeah, and so too cool.
And then also, like, it's hard, like, when you're seven.
Yeah, it's you so just easy. Walk up. Go, do you want to play with me? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I love it. It's when I take my godson. When I was home in Ireland, took my godsons to the park. And it's so lovely to just see, like, friends. Or this little girl came up to me and she was like, what are you? Wait, I like your coat. She, like, just came up and was, like, talking away to me. I was like, guess we're besties now. Like,
I think I still do that now.
Yeah. Oh,
I've
decided
this is how I will forever make friends. It's just going up to people going, we're friends now.
Yeah, you do actually you're quite formal, and you'll be like, so we're going to be friends now. Will you come hang out with me? And I'm like, oh, okay, great.
But now it's like locked in, because like, people are social and nice to each other.
It
but
is
being
hard.
Able to like lock in knowing I'm now going to invite you to my birthday party.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
Yeah, you are literally doing it like you're a child. My birthday party. You better show up. The idea of a birthday party just feels quite childlike.
But like that, every year when it comes around to birthday parties, people, you're like, oh, do I invite them? Do
no,
they
I
count?
No, I know,
I'm
I know.
Like, I'm just
You're very
you know.
Good at formalizing, like, we are now friends in a way where, yeah, I can invite you to stuff, or you can invite me.
And I'm going to come see you outside of our normal
Yeah,
network.
I do think as well, as an adult sometimes, you're so like, oh, I've met someone in work, like, we get on really well. But you're like, oh, how do we...
Yeah.
jump, and you're always like, we're friends. And also, if you're someone who's like, me and Ruby are friends, and she hasn't told you you're friends, you're not friends.
Whoops.
Ruby tells you directly to your face.
Scandal. I know. Sometimes I tell people this, that I'm like, oh, I make formal requests for friendship. And then I look at the group and go, oh, I've done it with no one here. And this is the request. Covered.
She doesn't do group requests either. That's always fake. If you were in a group request, it was fake. 110. Okay, but so that was the first way you earned money. I mean, we're going to put it loosely, selling children at campsites.
And then there was also like, I did like cat sitting for, so my dad's colleagues. So where my dad works, a lot of them, they all go off like for weeks at a time for conferences or
helping.
I should
say your dad is a university lecturer.
Yeah, or researcher. And so, and people go to
researcher.
Well, that's relevant because then people would go to like
on research projects
in other countries and things. And so they'd be gone for like long periods of time. And so they would need someone to look after their cat. So there were points where I was like cycling around Southampton,
doing your rounds,
doing my rounds, like going, putting the cat food out, stroking the cat.
Gotta get buttons. Gotta get Miffy.
Hanging out with the cats so they feel like,
oh my god, that's cute. The way so many people have like paper rounds as their first job. You had cat rounds.
Cat rounds.
Just catnip. Just Ruby on a bike.
But there was like
just like the Pied Piper of cats in Southampton.
Yeah. One of my favorite cats, they were called Tinky. And so, but Tinky was a flat cat and so like didn't go outside and just stayed in their flat.
Right,
so I'd spend extra time at Tinky's.
When you said a flat cat, I was like, well, because you did a flat cat and I was like literally flat.
Oh no, I was thinking floor plan.
An indoor cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like didn't have like loads of space. And so I'd spend more time at Tinky's to like, and they were very fluffy and they wanted lots of strokes. And I was like, sure, man. And so to make them, and whereas other cats, I'd turn up at this house and there'll be like no sign of a cat, just the food would go. And
I'm like,
I've never seen this one, but I'm here.
Yeah. Okay, amazing. I actually, you were saying about cats. I was sort of cat sitting. I was babysitting last night for my friend who has two cats.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because while the baby's up and he's the cutest baby boy, but they like were both just asleep in my friend's room on the bed. Like again, couldn't really see one of them, knew the other one was there, whatever else. Yeah. The minute the baby went down to sleep, the two of them came pouncing out. And I realized then that basically they don't like the baby. The baby's loud. The baby cries. The baby grabs at them because he's like 8-9 months now.
Yeah.
And he's grabbing at them. So whenever he's like he's like crawling and stuff, they are like, you cannot see them. And the minute he goes down to sleep, the two of them were up. They were out. They were climbing on everything, fighting with each other. I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, so I found myself last night screaming at these two cats going, if you wake your brother up, I will kill you. Because they were just being really loud.
The cat.
And I was like, you guys were, whenever I've been, and like, even when I come around to see my friend with the baby and stuff, they're always just snoozing in the back. You don't even see them. Yeah. It's like, they came alive. Nocturnal cats.
Yeah.
100%, crazy. 100%. Okay, so Ruby, into the questions, because you have had many, many, many years. An odd job. And we want to get into it. So, okay, what is the weirdest thing that someone has ever said to you in work?
It's so funny, because when we were looking through these questions, I was like, I made these questions, I should have answers to these. And I was like, golly, I don't know. And so I was thinking about this one, and I think this wasn't to me.
Yes.
But this was while I was working as a TA, a teaching assistant.
Which is one of your jobs that you've had.
One of my jobs, when I was working in the schools. And it's always...
Teaching people's a theme, you'll see.
Yeah. It's always what you hear... children saying to other children, or child comes up and says to you and you're like, what? Why have you said that?
Come
what?
Again?
Excuse me?
I think I need to write a report now.
Yeah. But this one was just really funny. It was one time I was sat with one of the children I was supporting, and we were just doing the work at the back of the room, happy days.
Yeah.
And the teacher at the front was explaining, I think like a classic kid in a science class asking like a random question. It was like, why do we get headaches?
Oh yeah.
And just like random. And so the teacher, like a good teacher, just started giving some like, being like, oh sure, I'll work it out and I'll explain to the class.
Yeah.
Keep their curiosity alive. Good. And so he said, why do you? And so the teacher was listing for a bunch of reasons. And one of the reasons he's like, oh, you can get a headache if you're holding in a fart for too long.
What?
which I was a bit like, bullshit.
And then Ruby tried it.
But then this kid turned to the next kid being like, oh, that's why my mum always has a headache. And I just sort of was stood at the back, and I had to turn to the kid and be like, I'm just going to step outside a moment. I was like, that's funny.
Yeah. Is it always when your dad comes home she has that headache, is it? Because let me tell you something, that's not holding in farts.
It's just the fact
that's holding something else hostage.
It's just number one, the fact that the kid is like, my mum always has a headache. You're like, cool, why? And then number two being like, well, it must be she's holding in gas. It's just so much.
Because I'm sure the teacher was probably like, oh, you know, your eyesight being bad, being dehydrated, holding in farts. It's the farts. She's full of them.
It's not because there's like a loud, annoying noise constantly in our house. Or that she's stressed or like, I mean, to do lots of things.
Or trying to avoid sex with dad. We all know it's a combo of all.
No, it's the beans.
The flatulence. So when you worked as a TA, like that, because that was partly while we lived together.
Yeah, that was partly why we lived together.
What was like some of the best parts about that job? Because I know it was like highs and lows.
I mean, obviously the highs is always, and every person who's like worked with kids or worked in schools or whatever will be like, one of the highs is the kids. It's the fact of working with them. And they're great. Also, I made like, all jobs you go through, you make good friends and people you really connect with. As you go through. I went to one of my TA friends' weddings at the beginning of this year and then recently their baby shower.
Yeah, that's really so lovely. Nice.
But no, yeah, it's the, I mean, working as a TA is really full on, especially the school that I was in. Yes. And I think anywhere it is, because you're, the school that I was in had a higher than usual percentage of children with...
Wasn't it a special needs school?
It wasn't officially a special needs school, but because it got well known for being so good with children who had extra requirements and additional needs, it just meant more kids were being sent there who have those additional needs, who parents thought they might later require those additional needs, so they got pushed along. So that meant, so it was, I think it was 8% of the school population had
a mainstream school.
I think the normal percentage is 2%.
Yeah.
So 8% was significant, and then parents were obviously bringing kids who maybe didn't have any official thing on paper, but they were speculating it. So then there was also lots of reports being written up. And a lot of time when you were sat in a class, you would then, one of the things, you'd be observing a kid and be like, do they have a report about them? And then you go up to someone and be like, I think we need to just check in on this kid. Because you're like, oh, I'm actually, this kid is asking for my help. I'm going over and helping. And it would be useful if you then get them educational health report plan. I can't remember, but there's an official
ELP or something, educational learning plan or something.
If you get them one of them, then that means the school gets funding to get more TAs. And that's good. But I loved helping the kids. One of my favorite things, I ran spelling lessons, which,
oh my god, yeah, which is hilarious because
I'm fucking dyslexic. And they were like,
it was really the blind leading the blind in that one.
There was one point when they were like, we want you to teach phonetics, and I was like, no one ever taught me phonetics. what the fuck is this? It was like, oh, this is how you read. I'm like, I don't fucking know. What are we doing?
That's what I did love about you being a TA. There was times when you come home and you'd be like, the kid asked a question, and I was sitting there going, yeah, because I don't know either.
But yeah, it's always one of my favorite, and this has happened in quite a few jobs, and I'll talk about one of the other ones later. Actually, no, I can talk about it now. But it's when a kid will turn around to me and go, Miss, I'm dyslexic. Like, it's really dramatic. I'm like, oh yeah, me too, no worries. And they're like, oh, okay. It's because everyone else in their life tells them like, oh no, you're dyslexic. Oh no, this is bad. Oh no, you're this. And then I'm just like, oh, that's chill. And then immediately you just see them like go, oh, okay, fine.
I feel like I have that, but in the reverse, where I'm not dyslexic, but everybody else in my family is. So I was like, no big deal. Like, I was jealous of my two older brothers and my mom. They're all dyslexic. And my two older brothers got so much more help and so much more attention than I did. Because one of my brothers wasn't in mainstream school for a few years. And so he had to get like driven. And it was like, we live in the countryside. The school he had to go to was up in Dublin. So my mum would have to like leave us, get us ready for school, drop us early and then drive up and down with my brother. Yeah. So he had to go in the car. And like this main street school he went to, he didn't have a uniform, you know, and you're like, yeah, big deal stuff. And then my other brother, he had the resource teacher who was really cool in our school and got to have one-on-ones with them every single day. And yeah, then sometimes after school would go to like an additional resource teacher and stuff as well. And or they would come to our house and do stuff with both of my brothers. And I loved this woman. And I was so like, can I show you the reading I've been doing this week? And she was kind of like, oh, yeah, because she'd be like every week she'd be like, okay, now you're going to read this book, right? John, like to my brothers. And they'd be like, and I'd be like, I've read 3 books this week. Like, I was so annoying. But I was jealous of dyslexics. I was really jealous. And something, though, that I was glad of was my brothers also got out of Irish, which is normally, because the Irish language is compulsory in Irish schools. Hmm. But if you're dyslexic and or started your education outside of Ireland, aka in England, which both my brothers did, then you're exempt because you're behind, whatever else, and also dyslexic. And also, they kind of, it quite works out that, like, whenever in the day a teacher is like, now we're doing Irish, and all the dyslexic kids go to their one-on-ones. This just works out really well time-wise.
Yeah, that's quite
handy. So they're never missing anything they need to catch up on. But I was like, oh, they get to miss out on Irish. But then the upshot of that was no one in my family knew Irish. I learned Irish. It was like my secret little language.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's my little machine. Fella me gael 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 gael. So, yeah, exactly. Bit of culture for you there.
Beautiful.
I'm glad we don't caption our content because that would be your job and I'd love to see you try.
Oh, no, but I'm trying to think. Oh, can I tell you about one of the kids that I helped?
Yeah.
I can't, like, obviously.
It's your episode, baby.
Well, there was, I remember one of the, like, the most magical moments when I was TAing that I was like, oh my God, I feel like this, like, it really, like, despite the days being really stressful and, like, there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I would always keep a little notepad on me so that anytime a kid was like, oh, can I get that? Or, oh, I need to email something. Or, I need to, I'd just write a constant to-do list so that when I had 5 minutes in front of a computer, I would then just go through and power through. And so there was lots of, like, it was always go, you had to be really efficient with your time.
Yeah.
But I remember one lesson, so there was this child who I supported, and they had, so they had something called it's called PDA, which is pathological. Now I know, when I first heard it, I was like, mah! But it's pathological defiant disorder.
Yeah, I know the one you mean. It's where, like, they just can't.
Why is it that, why is the
defiance
A at the end? Oh, I think it's a, anyway, I can't remember why there's the A at the end, but we, it was this, Google, and so us. Basically you can't, it's not that you can't, but if you were to go, you need to write this,
because
you've said you need to, there's just something that makes them go, no, I'm not gonna, and then once they say no, that sort of like brings down like a brick wall.
Yeah.
And it's like, so you have to really think about the language you're using, and especially if you're new to the child, they're going to be more likely to be defiant against you. So it's this whole thing where I was trying to build a relationship with a kid who I was trying to get to do their work, who didn't want to do their work already because boring work, and also I was new. Yeah. And so they were like, so it was really set up for me to fail.
Really going around the houses here.
I was there going, fuck. But I would come into this lesson, and always my logic in my head with these lessons was like, even if it was like a kid who I was going to find a bit challenging, like who was going to be like, I'm like, okay, this might be a bit of an uphill battle, but I'm like, but it's only an hour.
Yeah, it's only
an hour. And I'd say that sometimes to the children, just be like, it's only an hour. Actually, if we look at the clock, we
stick
only
stick with me here, buddy.
We only have 15 minutes left. We've got this. And but I remember one, so I went into one of his English lessons, and I came into this English lesson, and normally my aim was like, I just need this kid to be happy in this class. I don't necessarily need them to do work. I just need them to be happy and fine.
And not disrupt.
But, and if I can manage to get him to do anything, great. But that was sort of my logic. Like, I'm not going to try and be like, you need to do this. I'm like, I'm just going to try and see how much, but like, it's fine. But we were doing, the class had changed to a creative writing class. Mm. And I, at the time, was doing a creative writing workshop.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. I've been doing this myself. And the kid was like, oh, okay. And I was like, so should we write a story? And then suddenly the kid, I'm not messing, over the course of 4 English lessons, wrote a 10-page story.
Yeah, I remember you telling me this.
Size 10 font, no big spacing, no nothing. 10 pages. They were so excited about writing. And because I love stories as well, the kid would then be like, the kid would turn to me and go, and then this happens, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then miss. And I'd be like, yeah. And he'd be like, then a battle happens, and I'll be like, oh, shit! And because I was excited.
Teachers are like, Ruby, keep it down.
Because I was excited, then the kid was excited. Yeah. And we wrote this really...
And it was suggestion of like, should we give this a go? Not like, we need to write a story now.
It was really fun. And like, also when we first started, so I got a laptop for us to be able to type it out so it's easier.
Yeah.
And I started typing and I started like doing spelling mistakes and being like, oh, okay, because of what he was saying. And he went, no. And he took the laptop from me.
He was like, not you, dumb bitch, me. He was like, I don't like doing what I'm told, but I can fucking spell.
Yeah, exactly. But it was so great.
So nice.
That was like such a magical moment where I was like, yeah.
Yeah, what a win. It's great to get a win. I feel like that almost counts as one of our other questions. Like, it were a great win or a great save. Yeah. You made it work. I feel like that was that. But anyways, another question for you, Ruby. What is something that someone made you take off your CV or is on your CV and should come off it?
I can't remember if I still have this on there, but if it is on there, then I'm glad it is. If it isn't, okay, fine, but I want it back on.
But that's not really the question, but okay.
But one of my first jobs was that I was a party fairy.
I don't think anybody would be surprised. No one is surprised.
Yeah, when I was 15 or 16, I can't remember, I was in school, and it was in a GCSE drama class. We were doing like children's theatre, and we were just experimenting out like with children's theatre and how to perform children's theatre. And so
I love the idea at 15, you were like, kids theatre, you were children.
I know. Yeah. But then my English teacher came in while we were doing it, and she watched for a bit, and she went, Ruby, do you do children's parties? And I went, yes. And so then my English teacher hired me to come to her house, dress up as a fairy, and just run games with her, with like her child and the child's class. And I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that, no worries. And so I did, and I got like 80 quid.
Hilariously something that I have done as well. I feel like this is an odd job that we both had.
The face painting?
The face painting is one where, again, I just bluff my way into it. But no, I've literally run birthday parties for kids before. And it started with when I first moved to London, I stayed with a family friend and they had a daughter who at the time was like 9. I don't even want to discuss. No, it was her 11th birthday. I feel like it was her 11th birthday. She's in college. Anyways. it was like her 11th birthday. And again, I had been staying in their guest room for like 2 weeks. And I was like, I'll babysit some nights to like pay for it or whatever else, make it up. It was like my dad's childhood mate. But the child, it was like her 11th birthday and the mum was quite busy and whatever else. And I was like, I can help run the birthday. And they were like, really? And she just wanted to do a sleepover with her friends. And so I like organized this whole like, I can't remember. We did some sort of crafting. I think I did face painting or glittering as well. But the main thing was that they were obsessed with was that we made a music. We made like a compilation video, like like a music video to Taylor Swift's Shake It Off, which was a big song at the time.
Yeah.
And it was that thing of like, do you remember back in the day that like Call Me Maybe, everyone was doing like dances and clipping stuff together. So we did all these dances and like I added it all into this video for them.
Really,
and the girls were like, and then other parents were like, do you do part? I was like, sure. I got a nannying gig out of that.
Yeah.
A permanent job that I had for a while. So yeah, it worked out. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, but just saying yes. And also I love that both of us have the same energy where adults saw us and were like, you can deal with a kid's birthday party, because I feel like now like a 40-year-old working mum is like the last thing I need is to wrangle like a classroom full of fucking children. And then they're like, this energetic,
look at this,
hyperactive teenager who's also quite a people pleaser. You'll be the perfect person for this job.
Thing is, I remember when I went to go do it and I went there and I did it because I was a party fairy and I was dressed up like a fairy.
Yeah.
And there were little boys at this party as well. And some of the little boys would come up to me and like, you're not a fairy. You're too tall to be a fairy.
And that's the problem with men.
My line was, I had it pre-prepared, was that, oh, well, actually, as you know, normally fairies are very small. But I made myself bigger. I did a bigger spell. But I got my maths wrong. And now I'm this size. Whoopsie.
And like, then I was like, shut the fuck up.
That makes sense because women aren't supposed to be that big.
And women will buy that maths.
Yeah, that tracks. I love there's a bunch of little lads in Southampton who were like, yeah, women are shit maths. And it was all because of you lying to them at birthday parties.
Yeah, idiots.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Okay, but you did...
ferrying, but I wanted to ask you, because I know it's something you love to talk about.
Yeah.
What was your favourite ever job that you've done of all the odd jobs?
I realise all of these. I have, like, I feel like in the podcast, we've spoken about, like, my times working as at a pub.
Yeah.
And, like working with adults and things. And then all of these, I've been like, children.
Yeah.
Children. And then also my job currently is working with adults. Helping.
It's like teaching. You love to, but you are such a sort of... energetic, and also like you're someone who is like so good at bringing people with them.
Yeah, because I would say my favorite job that I've had, if I were to look back, other than like comedian obviously and all the things I do currently,
yeah,
but if looking back at the past ones, was probably when I used to run drama clubs and youth theaters.
Yeah,
I loved that so much
because you did an apprenticeship, right?
Yeah, so I did an apprentice. So my first job out of college was I was a creative learning apprentice, which is where I got paid £2.68 per hour.
Like what? But also, these apprenticeships, they aren't a thing in Ireland.
No, and I'm not with it. Again, I did the first one that this theatre was doing at the time, and then it very quickly, like they just thought it was a way to be able to bring in someone to help with the youth theatre and the drama club, and there'll be some additional perks. But then turns out we also had to do this whole qualification, and the qualification was bad, and it was just like a whole mess. But what I ended up afterwards taking over the drama club for this regional theatre, and then through that, another regional theatre reached out and wanted help with running one of their drama clubs there. And then I ended up taking over more of those drama clubs. And so then I just ended up, but the thing, I was 18 when I started taking over multiple drama clubs and youth theatres and things.
Yeah.
And what was really funny is that one of the groups that I was running, where it was it was 15 to 25 year olds. And I was 18 running it.
My God.
Because the thing is, I
didn't know this.
I interviewed for it.
Yeah.
They reached out. I was doing this. And I was like, oh, are you available to do this? And I was like, yeah, I'll come. So I did an interview. And then I ran a taster session with the kids.
Oh, okay.
And there was like two people in the class who were older than me.
Yeah.
But I didn't tell them. And I've always looked... People just always assume I'm older.
Well, you were tall.
I'm very tall. I'm very long. How could you possibly be that long and such a baby?
Yeah, yeah.
So I
like the idea that it's like, well, 18 to 25. Generally, women are done growing at that stage. But it's like, she's so tall. She must be.
I'm so long. So I ran and then they picked me out of the other people. The kids picked me.
Yeah.
Of course they did. I'm amazing.
She's amazing.
And then it wasn't until the week of their show. I was like, I was like, oh, by the way, guys, I'm 18. And they were like, what? I'm 18, and they were like, no, prove it. And I got out my ID, and they were like, oh, okay. And I was like, yeah, I didn't want to tell you until the project was over, because I didn't want you to like
not respect me or give me authority.
Because also, like, I was coming in, like, I've always
wait. Was there not? I have a question, because my memory of drama, teenage drama, all the like plays I did when I was a teenager, whatever else, is that if there was any boys in the group, the sexual tension was off, because it was, you know, the ratio was always way, way off. So my question is, when you were, is you were the same age, and even like friendship wise and dynamics, like, was there any dramas?
No, I mean, the thing for me, when I started running, because the thing is,
maybe if it was 18 to 25, some of those boys had come out as gay, which a load of if you did drama as a teenager, you fancied a gay boy, like that is that is what happened.
No, well, the thing is that I think this is quite evident from who I am as a person, but I took the responsibility of being a leader quite strongly. So even though I started assisting with groups that I actually, like, the term before was in as a participant, so I started assisting, and I went around to all of my friends. I was like, by the way, now that I'm assisting, I'm not gonna be like your jokey in the sessions.
I'm gonna be
the appropriate amount, because now I'm running it, and then also like thinking about safeguarding and stuff and being like, look, now this is part of my
this
role.
This is why people think you were 25, because you were 18 being like, so I'm gonna remove myself from this dynamic, whereas I would have been 18 and been like, well, I fancy him, so let's give him a role. Like, I was responsible, but I was like, you know, a couple of babes in me at the weekend. Like, yeah, no worries. I would have shifted him on the dance floor in the nightclub. Why not?
But that was only one of my groups. Predominantly of my groups, I ran...
I was going to say, you worked with smallies, didn't
you? Yeah, drama. So I worked with like 5-year-olds up to 25, but predominantly of my groups were 5 to 13-year-olds.
Lovely.
And I like, oh, I have so many good stories of running. And I loved doing, one of my favorite things that we used to do was that, because again, all the kids loved me. I used to have teachers come in and watch my lessons. Like teachers from local schools come in and watch my lessons and ask me about how I did behavior management. I was like, just be a legend. And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they'll respect you.
I don't know, have them love you and worship you.
But like they used to come in and ask me questions and stuff about what I was doing. But one of the things I do is I'd give them a task, I'd let them run off, and then if I needed to announce something, if I was over, like giving them a new rule or letting them know that the props cupboard was open or letting them like going, I want you now to add in a sound effect in your show or whatever. If I just need to interrupt them, what I do is I'll count down from 10. Classic technique.
Yeah.
But what I started doing is I'd go counting down from 10, but I'd do a random like statue position on each number. So I'd be like 10 and we'd have my arms outstretched and yeah. Then 9 and then have one leg in the air and then go 8 and like just keep moving. And I really, and then what happened is I just started doing that because I was bored. And then they started joining in. So as soon as they saw me doing it, then I would have a whole classroom all going 8, 7 and all in different positions till we got to 1. And then we'd all stay frozen in our last position as I would say, then say the announcement. And then I go and go. And then they'd all go. But it started off as being a way of like...
You train them like dogs is what you're telling me.
Well, no, it
started... But when I used to work as a nanny, parents sometimes would be like, they're so obedient. I'd be like, I literally have trained them like yeah. a dog. That is what it is. People overcomplicate some of this shit. I'm like, literally.
Because it used to be I count down from 10 to try and get them to stop talking, to be like, yeah. I want you to finish your sentence and then we'll get to the thing. And then it started being they would stop talking at 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were like, we want to join in on this bit. And I'd be like, great, amazing. And then...
Also, teaching kids to, you know, play the bit. Yeah. Nice to do.
They were all very funny.
Yeah.
I even, I had recently, I've been like bumping into some of the drama club parents and I haven't run drama club since, for like 9 years.
Yeah.
And actually one of my favorite stories was that this was a couple of years ago. This was like about 4 years ago. I was at an event in Southampton and I saw walk into the event, one of the drama club parents and two of the kids. And I saw the kids walk in. But the thing is, this would have been 6 years after I stopped. And I left them when they were like 8, 9.
Yeah, yeah.
So 6 years on an 8, 9-year-old and to be now like a teenager. That's significant.
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
probably
yeah.
not going to remember me from looking at me. Like yeah, that's yeah. unlikely. So I was like, okay, they're not going to remember me. And the parent, she didn't used to do pickup. The dad used to do pickup.
Right,
because
yeah,
he
yeah.
worked nearby. And so she wouldn't recognize me because I only met her 4 times at the end of year showcases.
Yeah.
So I was like, cool, they're not going to remember me. But when they came over, I went, oh, hello. Just so you know, I used to teach child's name at drama club.
Yeah, yeah.
And she went, oh my God, are you before Ruby or after Ruby?
What a way to tell time. BR or AR?
Sorry, I am Ruby. Yes, I am the benchmark
I am
to which...
the Ruby.
I am the benchmark to which what drama club leaders are compared to.
I would love to be like, after... Oh, it all went downhill then. Or she was like, oh, thank God. It all picked up then. Like, that could be telling.
No.
But it was clear that you were so
and
beloved.
And then they were very excited and that was lovely.
Did the kids recognize you?
Yeah, but they were teenagers. So at that point, they were like, oh my God.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, that's okay. I think you're both great. And then actually this last week I was at an event.
Oh yeah.
And I saw two drama club parents again, like 9 years post, but I didn't quite recognize them at first till they went, Ruby, you used to teach our kids drama club. And then immediately then child's names came back to me.
That's lucky because I would struggle.
And then I said no. And then it turns out, so one of the kids, she would now be in her 20s, which is crazy.
It's terrifying.
Because I left her when she was 13 and then yeah. it's been 9 years, so she'll be in her 20s now. But she had an Edinburgh Fringe show last year.
Yeah, you said that. Oh, I just love that.
Her mum had a flyer in her bag and I saw it and I was like, oh my God!
Yes.
Oh yeah, I loved running drama club. I was very good. The parents loved me. I could deal with behavior. I had a very firm, like if someone misbehaved, then I'd be like, sit out. And that's it. They just had to sit. And then
you're authoritative.
And then I'd come back in, and then I'd go talk to the parents at the end, and then always make sure that the following week you go up with good news. If you had to go talk to a parent about bad news 1 week, always make sure the next week you go up with good news.
I mean, unless it's double bad news.
No, it's never double bad news.
No, Ruby wouldn't allow double bad news weeks.
No, it was so much fun. And I loved playing games. You know Splat?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Splattergrees?
I don't think so.
So there's a game, there's a drama game, which most people know, called Splat, where someone in the middle points at someone on the outside.
Yeah, we should explain for someone those who weren't dragged through multiple drama classes as a child. You know why? Did I ever tell you I was into this one group who apparently my best friend just told me that they're still doing it. This like woman, I won't say her name, but she was like, oh, guess she was like so and so. I was like, that is not still going. Because, and again, this is probably unfair, but they were the aunt of a kid our age, so like definitely at least our parents' age. But she seemed like an older aunt. You know, one of these women who was like, she seemed 50 when I was in primary school. So how is that person still teaching drama classes? But they used to do one where my primary school was, and then like in the next town over, they would do one there, and whatever else. My mum put me in both. Like, that's how much I needed. My mum was like, we just have to keep her busy and just have to let her burn this energy off.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but for those who don't, explain what Splat.
So Splat is, see, someone in the middle, the leader, will be in the middle and they'll point to someone on the outside going, Splat. That person will then duck and the two people on the outside of them will turn to each other and have to shoot each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're second to shoot, if you like, because it's imagine it like
people
a little
sometimes shoot samurai as well. Yeah. That's similar.
But then the person who is second will sit down and they'll be out. Or if you don't duck fast enough with the person in the middle shooting, basically if you get shot without ducking quick enough or shooting first, then you're out. It's a very classic drama game. But we used to play Splattergrees, where rather than me in the middle saying splat, I would then say a category to the person on the outside. So like I would point at them and say a vegetable. And then that person would still duck. And then the two people on either side then have to get as fast as possible to say a vegetable, which was really fun. It was just a fun way of playing the game. And then what I'd often do at the end, you're supposed to do like a standoff where two people stand back to back. When you're down to two people, they stand back to back. And then you go, when you hear this word, you turn around and shoot each other and the first person wins.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was like having a bit of a week, I would go, right, rather than that, what we're going to do is when you hear this word, you're going to turn around and you're going to give me a compliment and the best compliment wins. So it'd be great. So I would then.
No wonder you love. No, what was your favorite job? It was the one where I forced children to give me compliments and I make them compete.
But then they would like.
Your lives depend on it. Give me a good compliment. Mama needs a win.
But then I would say something like, the magic word, like say if it was like splat, I'd say splat, and then they turn around and they go, you're really kind.
I was going to say, what was the best compliment you ever got in that high pressure situation out of a child?
It was just really funny. And I'd be like, great.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Absolute child manipulation.
But what they learned, really the thing I was doing then is that they knew. No, they did. The thing they knew, it wasn't necessarily about the winning. It was about who could be funnier.
Yes.
I would keep people in if they were funny. Yeah. Like, yeah, you can stay in. Like they knew, they learned that from me. It was really fun. But yeah, I used to have like local, again, I was 18 to 21 when I was running drama clubs. And I used to have other drama club leaders. I used to have teachers come in and other drama club leaders come and ask me for help and ask me to show them what I did and how I did it. And
I mean, you're still technically with your workshops, like it's a version of that now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's obviously slightly more sophisticated because you're dealing with scientists in the academic setting.
Yeah, but so I'm not going to play the same sort of
someone give me a compliment. They're like, excuse me?
No, I'd still ask for that. I think it's a really funny power move.
It's a good thing you like doing drama classes and not being an evil dictator.
I know.
Because you won't use your powers all for good.
It's really good.
Okay, so then, of all the jobs, because we discussed, you've done TAing, workshopping, drama school, birthday fairies. We previously discussed on the pod, worked in the cook for a long time. Build-A-Bear, all that stuff. Of all of those jobs, which do you think you learned the most from and has been like the most useful for you? And as I always say, this can be practical skills or this can be, you know, mentally, emotionally, whatever else. But what one would you say out of all of them you have like learned the most, grown the most, and was it the one when you made small children give you compliments?
You know, it's really, because the thing, I feel like when I took over Drama Club, I sort of like, I got myself really big folders and I made like, I would print out every, like I implemented so much like on, like there was no sort of structure. They were like, yeah, just run Drama Club. And like, I think generally this is why it's before Ruby and after Ruby.
Yeah.
Is that before it was like, people just come and run sessions and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I've always been someone who's like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it properly. And so I had these like little planner sheets and I'd write out, and I had like 2 years of curriculum.
Because
then by that point they move up into the next group and I could circle it back round.
Yeah.
And I would also evaluate at the end of each session like how it went, and I'd make notes on
you were doing like teacher training for yourself.
Yeah.
Making lesson plans, evaluating your lessons.
But I was like, I would write down like if something went well or how I could do it differently the next time or who won a game, because sometimes they'd be like, oh, can I go first the next time? And I'd be like, yep. And I'd just make a note so I could remember. And I'd have all of these resources and everything. And like, that was just really handy. And it just feels like I don't know if I learned that through doing Drama Club, but I made it exist.
That was the first time you did that.
And
yeah,
then
yeah,
now
yeah.
You know me. I have documents
I
for everything.
I do know you. I do.
I have documents for everything.
As I feel like I've said, maybe in this episode or at least today, there is a reason, right, that I attach myself like a barnacle to your boat. I'm like, Ruby, do you have a list of all the festivals? Ruby's like, yep, there's that list. Here's that emails. Here's what we should do. Here's a checklist. I'm like, stunning.
But it's because like the drama clubs, I was just sort of left to like, just do it. And yeah. There wasn't really any.
You were
so
able
then I was
to...
like, well, I want them to have a nice performance. So then I sort of chase up all these things on like, how can we do a performance? How can I make this happen myself? Yeah. I don't have loads of resources. What props can I make and help them out with?
Yeah.
What resources do I have for me? And so I made that happen or exist. Or like the fact I took over a youth theatre and it was in 10 weeks they had a performance. They were doing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh yeah. Ooh, okay. Pretty
yeah. They had 10, it was the audition only group. It
okay,
was the older group.
Okay, right.
They had 10 weeks to do their performance. And they had done none of the script before and the other director had left. And so that's why this is why I got interviewed to be brought in to see if I could. And so I came in, I remember they were like, yeah, we got 10 weeks. And their rehearsals were like 2.5 hours long. And they came up to me about an hour into the first and be like, we normally have a break now. I'm like, you're not having breaks anymore. We have 10 weeks to get this
kids, you've
show
got
on.
Work to do.
We need to do 10 pages every time we meet so that then the last two sessions we can do this. That's not happening anymore. And they were like, oh, okay. I was like,
these kids were like,
oh no, you give me a restriction, I will make things happen.
But like, I'll work to a deadline, but you're going to fucking work too.
But like, I think, yeah, immediately having to work in the arts where you have very little given to you. And then being like, I'm going to make
resources.
Something happen.
Yeah,
and I'm
going
to make these children feel like they're in something that's really special.
Yeah.
And that's happening.
I love that. I love knowing the origins of where you're. Yeah. And I think it is. I think it stood to you so well because like your workshops now and stuff like this, like, again, that is something where like all the curriculum and all of the like lesson planning and the sort of work that you do and like the timelines and the schedule and everything else, like university is like, oh, we'd like someone to do this. You've laid all, like, it's entirely self-generated.
Yeah.
And like comedy is a lot the same, like we've said, like there's so much admin because you just got to do it all. Like,
you have to make things
there's
happen.
No one who comes up to you and is like, I'd love to make you a comedian, and like in the way that we sometimes think that, like, you know, when we're like, kid, you're gonna be a star. Yeah. I'm going to make you a big deal on the big screen someday. I'm
going to see your name up in big bright lights.
Big bright lights. I'm going to make you a star. You have to be, and even like within comedy, so many different things you can do. But like, even your writing and stuff like this, like you've literally an award-winning comedy writer with your scripts and stuff. But again, that's all like, it's one of those, if you don't do it, no one's going to make you do it unless you just self-. motivate yourself to do it.
Yeah.
So I love that that's where that came from.
It was literally making me think. I remember one time with my 5 to 7s, we did a production of The Ugly Duckling, where I rewrote. So I rewrote like fairy tales for
were
the
there like little lisps and stuff like that.
Oh, with the 5 to 7s, you would tell a story, but you would have a narrator post, and that's where you could have the script and an assistant sat next to it, and they would help them read. And if there were any siblings in the group, they would go up together so the parents could get a good photo of both their kids performing.
Oh, that's smart.
I'm very good. And they'd go up and they'd read their little bit of script, and so the script would be read so that everyone else can perform. But the Ugly Duckling started. I made them all little egg masks. So they had little, like, so it was like
coming out of an egg.
And so they all started on the stage. The lights were like low, and there was like pond sound effects, and the parents came in, and all them, they were hiding there behind their masks, and then they'd flick it away to have a look at their mum, and I'd be like, put it back. And then the child who was playing the mother duck was then walking around checking on
waddling around,
and then the show started, and the narrator went, one day there was a bunch of eggs or whatever, and then suddenly the mum heard, and then all the kids went crack. It's fucking adorable. And I made sure all the parents loved me, because they were like, this is so cute. And I made every prop. Anyway.
Amazing. Well, Ruby, thank you so much for coming on the other. I think it's nice to share more about all our odd jobs. So when we're asking people about things, the listeners have a context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was so difficult for me to get here today.
I know. Very hard. She's a very booked and busy woman. This writer, facilitator, comedian.
Yeah.
All of the above. Anything you'd like to share out?
Well, we both are going to plug, obviously, our Leicester shows.
Again. Do you know what they would make for anyone living in the regional Midlands? A great Christmas present.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
A ticket to Ruby Carr's Bite Me.
Ruby Carr's Bite Me. Or Kat Higgins In Memory of Me.
Yeah, that'd be really smart.
12th of Feb or the 21st of Feb. It's 2-1, whichever way you look at it.
We love you guys.
Like, follow, share, subscribe, rate, review. Do all of those things. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And no, we're not on a Happy New Year. This is our penultimate episode of 2025. We'll say Happy New Year in my episode.
Spoilers. Okay. Love you. Bye.
Bye.